Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lunchtime Special Podcast, a show about life, death, and everything in between. We hope you enjoy the show.
And now, I said, let me show in a figure how far our nature is enlightened and unenlightened. Behold, human beings living in an underground den, which has a mouth open towards the light, and reaching all along the den. Here they have been from their childhood, and have their legs and necks chained so they cannot move. Can only see before them, being prevented by the chains from turning round their heads. Above and behind them, a fire is blazing at a distance, and between the fire and the prisoners, there is a raised way, and you will see, if you look, a low wall built along the way, like the screen which marionette players have in front of them, over which they show the puppets. I see. And do you see, I said, men passing along the wall, carrying all sorts of vessels and statues and figures of animals made of wood and stone and various materials which appear over the wall. Some of them are talking, others silent. You have shown me a strange image and they are strange prisoners. Like ourselves, I replied, and they see only their own shadows or the shadows of one another, which the fire throws on the opposite wall of the cave. True, he said. How could they see anything but the shadows if they were never allowed to move their heads?
Hello, gentle listeners. Today, East meets West. As a petition, I will discuss illusion and the allegory of the cave by Plato.
Also, we'll be looking at illusion from the glass of perception of human beings, how we perceive the reality around us, where we will be digging down into Plato's idea of reality, and then the same context we'll try to look into from the yogic perspectives, that how reality differs from illusion on multiple layers.
So in the allegory of the cave, we have people tied and bound by the legs and the neck, and they're sitting in a cave deep underground, and they're looking at shadows being cast at the wall in front of them. They've been there since childbirth, so all they know are these shadows. So they perceive it as being real, that is the show, that is reality right in front of them. Later in the allegory, you realize there are people behind casting these shadows. And if these poor people tied there are freed and realize that they've actually been living a lie, well, it changes their world. Now, imagine if these people went back to the chained individuals and said, hey, life is different. This is not true. These are all shadows and illusions. What would happen? Would people be happy? Or would they actually turn around and say, you're mad. This is reality. This is what I see every day of my life. So, where do we go from there, Tish?
It's quite interesting. I was reading an article about that whatever we see in the moment through our eyes or hear through our ears, that event is already passed in space and time. So the sunrise, which we see, we have already passed almost approximately 8 minutes till the time it reaches to us. So the moment we perceive that reality, that was mere a shadow in a way, or projection of something which already happened somewhere else in a different form. In Allegory of the Cave of Plato, he's trying to distinguish, I mean, what I'm actually drawing out of it, is that what we perceive and what is reality, they are far apart. In the cave, those chained and only are able to see the shadows being carved on the wall. They are chained in a way that they cannot turn their head around to see what is causing this projection. So all they know is the projection, that shadow in their mind. So they deal with their daily reality in form of those shadows and not form of those objects which has caused those shadows. If we contextualize that in today's world, the media, news channels, movies, and many more windows through which we interact with reality. We perceive reality in the glass of somebody else. That is how it is projected to us to understand. We do not witness that real event. We do not know what factors are responsible to cause those events to happen. All we know is what is projected upon us, driven by certain interests. So the allegory of the cave of Plato is equally relevant, or even exponentially relevant in today's society, the way we are perceiving the reality. So Spiro, if you can put some more light, getting back into the time, imagine we are in the time of Plato. He was a disciple of Socrates. How these situations were, the society, the political situations, the law system, and how Plato got motivated to reach to this kind of enlightened ideas.
Having Socrates as a teacher would have been a great start for anyone. But ancient Greece, we're talking the city-state of Athens, actually. Philosophy was valued, and it was a bit of almost a tourist trade. You could travel to other places of Hellenistic area of the Mediterranean, to even to southern Italy or Syria, and people exchanged ideas. Philosophers debated, and so there was a culture of sharing ideas and really thinking things through. He didn't come out of a void. He came out of a lineage of, he is sometimes described as being almost Pythagorean. So he may have had his ideas from Socrates as well as Pythagoras. So this continuum of ideas has been built on, literally building on the shoulders of others. Now, at the time, we're talking about a city-state where they had a form of democracy. It's not what we think democracy is in with our modern eyes. You used shards of clay from broken vases, the ostraca, to basically ostracize, to remove individuals you don't want. It wasn't really a voting system to get your favorite candidate in. It was more like, I need to eliminate my opposition, as well as people who may not be necessarily good for the city-state.
Same political stuff.
Yeah. So basically what we do now, just in a different way, you get rid of the opponents. But it was a start. At least it asked people for, a bit of an opinion. What do you think? Should we collectively agree that we need to get rid of Mr. Timaeus here because we don't like his political views? And they would. The idea that people's opinions mattered, people considered what it was to think about things. And also they came from a basis where the subconscious and the metaphysical world and the physical world were linked. There wasn't a disconnect. So if you were going to speak in an allegory which spoke like as the cave allegory, the ideas weren't foreign. People would actually try to read between the lines and actually try and get some knowledge out of it. Even though it's a story and it's conveyed through a dialectic, a conversation, there is a meaning there, and people were happy to get to read it in a non-literal sense and actually get information out of it. I think that's maybe the biggest difference between our modern times and the ancient times. We are so literal now. If it's written down, well, that's what it means. Like, no, they see what it represents because it's the representation where the real jewels are. So everything that Plato says, and I believe it in many ways, he's an esoteric writer. He may say it's this, but it's probably that plus this and a whole bunch of other things. You combine them together, you can actually mix them around and get further meaning out of it because he's playing tricks. He's playing word games. His writing is amazing because he will say something and you can keep digging and keep digging and keep digging and get more information out of it. So, but that was actually a cultural thing at the time as well.
It was more like a conversational way in which you put the characters in.
Yes.
You form the relationships and you navigate or direct that story conversation to move into direction to actually kind of produce meaningful ideas for people to get out of.
Yes.
And putting it into form of story is one of the best ways how our minds actually comprehend the things.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's now I connect a few dots with the few yogic concepts and the Upanishads and the way the society were in India, in Indian subcontinent, and how they were seeing the reality. So what actually intrigued me a lot from Plato's perspective is that, I just quote, maybe the words may differ a bit, that the real form of anything is in the mind of creator. Otherwise, all the forms what humans perceive, they are abstract expression of those objects. Either it is beauty or quality or position, power, law, justice, etc. And this is the interesting bit here. I'm quoting from one of the scripture, which is called as Atmabodha. It's a Sanskrit terminology. it translates into self-realization. And it's a very beautiful way, or a kind of poetic way of expressing. So here it goes. Object, an external object, is to be perceived. Eyes are the perceiver. Eyes to be perceived. Mental activities are the perceiver. You need to mind it here. If somebody wakes you up in the middle of the night, you might open your eyes, but you may not comprehend anything. Because your mind is sleeping, even your eyes are open, they cannot process the data of the object which is passing through your retina. So eyes is actually perceiving the object. But I, in turn, is being perceived by the mental activities or mental activeness. And then this Rishi goes on further and says, mental activities are to be perceived. The witness, the awareness, the self is the perceiver. Now, the mental activities was different when you were a child. And the mental comprehension and activities are different when you're young and you, the way it goes. But that self, that sense of identity, uniqueness of self, you do not get confused with. I do not get confused with that I'm somebody else other than Atish. Mental activities are being perceived by an awareness, which is actually, there is a separation. Then the question comes, who is perceiving the perceiver? And this bit, that is where I find it very exciting, that Plato is saying the same words in a different terminology, that the real form is only in the mind of creator. And the real form is only in the mind of who is perceiving the perceiver, the awareness. Because whatever we are seeing through eyes, they are merely projection of light, reflection of light. Mental activities, they are borrowed ideas. They learn from behavior, they learn from books, they learn from people. And awareness is something which is like an engine which is facilitating it to happen. So, and that is where the illusion comes into place. We say, for example of mirrors. You see water in the sand, which is not there. You see a person, you draw certain facts, but when you interact, you realize this person is completely different than what I actually judged him in advance or her in advance. Or let's take it to the next level. If a person is reacting a person in a way, or the person's personality is in a way today, and you are interacting with this person, and this person is, oh, this how it he or she is reacting. But something happens to this person's landscape of mind and awareness. And after a few years, when you meet this person, it is a completely different person. So even if you interacted with this person very closely and you drew certain facts about him or her, you became false because this person got changed with his circumstances and all. So this idea of reality is really, really fascinating.
Well, if you think about it, what is reality is, actually no, there's a deeper question. There are multiple realities. Which layer of reality is either true or the origin of the projections? So going back to the cave, to the people chained, realities are the shadows. That's all they know. But then the people who are the puppeteers casting the shadows, their realities, they know that their reality is better than theirs or truer because they're the ones casting the shadows. But when freed from the bonds, and if they escape from the cave and have anavasis, which is the word for ascending, so ascend to the ground, up to the land above, then they realize the cave itself is not even real world because there's an entire world there. And then you do the opposite, which is kativasis, which is go back down, and you tell people, hey, reality is something totally different. So now at what stage is reality true? Technically, it's true at all stages because at that level of perception, that's all they know until you're proven wrong by experience or by perceiving something greater. So it's multi-layered and all
interwoven,
interwoven,
entangled,
because everyone's actually interacting with each other in a certain way. The puppeteer casting the shadow thinks the world is the cave itself, but he has no idea of the land above. So he hasn't made the anavasa, the ascendance. He hasn't stepped out of the cave. He thinks the cave is it. So even at that level, where he may be thinking he's superior, thinking, right, look at me, I'm the one casting shadows. I am manipulating the person in front of me. I'm holding up a book and they think that shadow is the book, but I've got the real knowledge in my hand. He's equally false because he doesn't perceive himself that the cave is the illusion too. So exactly, the creator, the one, the origin would have perception of all the layers of consciousness, all the layers of perception. So it's multi-tiered.
So it's quite interesting, just extending the same thread. So imagine the person who is casting those projections, the shadows. He is thinking, or this group, this, I mean, ultimately in society, it would translate into political groups, economical groups, capitalists, so-called religious leaders, religious groups, that they think that they are casting this shadow that I know the truth. This is the truth. They themselves are in the cave, but on the other side of the table, they might be a bit free in their boundaries to roam around in their mental spaces, feeling proud that they are the truth bearers.
Yeah, they're not chained.
They're not chained. And we are happily colonizing the mind of people by giving them shadows to believe in.
Yeah.
They themselves are walking on the same path of delusion.
Yes.
Now, the interest. What is the interesting bit here? Let's extend this thread a bit. When illusion is actually accelerating illusion in this example, what will happen in space and time tomorrow? When these people, these groups, they are thinking that they are actually the torchbearers, they are intellectual groups, they are the knowledge groups, while being in the same cave behind these masses, and they will perpetuate their practice, where would it lead in space and time tomorrow? Not into an ultimate chaos.
More of the same, repetition, loop.
All right.
Karmic loop.
Karmic loop. A karmic loop is like a vicious cycle of ignorance.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting out of the cave.
Yeah.
Nobody is ascending.
Yeah.
That reminds me of a story which I heard some days, some months before, that there was a very, very perplexed seeker of truth. This man, he was questioning and trying to understand the abstractions of life. Whatever he kept on believing, he was feeling deceived. So he decided he will go to an ashram into one of the Himalayan cities and will find a very good guru who can open his eyes to truth. So he went. He reached to an ashram, which he highly heard of. There was a very old person who was the guru in this ashram. He started living there and he started attending his sessions of this guru. So he used to go and sit, and this guru used to narrate a simple story to him. He used to listen to the story, he used to come back. Every day he was thinking something profound will come tomorrow. Next day also, another simple story. 1 week passed. He started feeling a bit deceived. He thought, I was here to know the mechanics of life, the core engines to open the truth to me. But what he's giving just the stories, it doesn't make a lot of difference to me. I think I got into a wrong place. And this started mounting in his head. This started rippling in his head. By the end of the second week, he almost decided, I'm going to leave this place. And the day he was about to leave, one young monk-looking person with a vibrant face entered into the ashram. And soon, he got engaged in the talk with the people there. So this seeker who was there for the last 2 weeks, he saw him talking and people listening, this young monk. So something is happening. He also joined in. And that moment, he realized that this young monk traveler, he was quoting from Upanishads and Vedas and yogic sutras, talking about reality and illusion, Atman and Brahman. Everybody was mesmerized. So did the seeker as well. He said, wow, this is the personality of a guru who will tell you the mechanics of things. You know, you'll get into it. Soon the guru also reached in. The old guy, he also joined in. 2 hours passed. This young monk stopped what he was explaining about reality and truth. He took a deep breath and looked at the people. Obviously, he knew that a lot of people were listening to him. He looked at people to see their state of mind, that if they are feeling convinced or not. In that process, he looked at the guru also. And he said, oh guru, I would like you to comment on what I said about reality. The guru replied, for the last 2 hours, I'm holding my breath and waiting that you will speak. But you did not speak. How can I comment on your ideas or your explanations if you did not speak for the 2 hours? This young man was very much confused. He said, what? Did not you listen to me talking about Vedas and Upanishads and truth and reality and yogic sutras and the life of human being into it? He said, yes, the same thing I'm saying. The Vedas, they were speaking. Upanishads were speaking. Bhagavad Gita was speaking. Yogic sutras were speaking. But you did not speak. When would you speak? This young man realized that what this guru was meaning. The higher the concept is, what my take on from this story, the higher the take on is, the higher the chances that you will get delusioned into it. Spirituality is the area, or even all the metaphysical sides of subjects are the areas they are more prone to actually trick us,
mm-hmm.
that I know the truth.
Mm.
And I will be happily standing with that book behind these chained people,
yeah.
and celebrating whole my life that I know the truth.
Mm. That's right.
But what I will end up in is that vicious cycle of karmic loop,
mm.
where I would be just facilitating ignorance and it will be turning into ignorance.
Yeah.
Who will ascend out of the cave?
Exactly. I think it's amazing how we can literally have the words and the ideas of the father of Western thought and have them perfectly sync up and match at the Eastern ideas as well. You know, because clearly the human mind has been debating these things of consciousness and awareness and what the reality is from every angle in every culture around the world. It's interesting having different stories effectively say the same thing. You almost need to hear it in different ways to really actually comprehend what it's going on about. The first time I heard about the allegory, I heard it, I read it, and I was like, okay, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get out of this. It's actually by talking to you over the last couple of months, I've been expanding my ideas of it, because to really comprehend it, I need to hear it coming from your interpretation, your stories from your background, plus also reflecting it upon current circumstances of the world to really experience it. By experiencing the illusion here and experiencing what's going on here, you really get a better understanding of what people have been trying to say for thousands of years. It was only a couple of days ago we were at the post office and we saw the virtual reality headset. So if that isn't the epitome of the illusion of is a virtual reality in the reality around us, which is equally virtual. So we are cloaking and covering and deepening the illusion by putting more filters and more layers in front of that. So we are now looking at a fabricated world inside glasses, inside a fabricated world. It's crazy. And humans are actually really comfortable in doing this.
Yes. And it's getting more and more cascading.
Yeah.
It's getting cascading more and more, right?
Yeah. And it makes you think. First, Plato will be turning in his grave going, what are you doing? You know, didn't you read my words? And, you know, same as all the gurus in the Himalayas are thinking the exact same thing. We've been saying the same thing for so long and no one pays attention. So now we're living in a world where we are perpetuating, a cascade is actually a very good word. It is, it's a cascade effect. We are deepening Maya, we're deepening the illusion, and we're projecting it onto our screens, and we're projecting it into our eyes, and it's covering everything. It really is covering everything. So our leaders are lying straight to our face. But if you're in the cave of a political party, if you are a Republican or a Democrat, and you're in those Republican or Democrat caves, that's the illusion. You live, you think you are right, and yeah. and the politicians waving, these are my ideas, and this is what, or on a spiritual religious level, you have a spiritual religious leader saying, I have got the commandments in front of me, and they say this, therefore this is what we do, and no one shall question, because if you do, you're going to hell. So hey, so again, perpetuate the illusion, perpetuate the lies.
That's amazing, actually. I mean, the very simple question comes: if we were subject to live through a commandment, why we are actually created dynamically and into unique ways?
Yes.
If we are all subject to be programmed,
mm.
in our conduct, make every face same.
Yes.
Exactly. Make every thought process same.
Why have diversity when there's a strict rule book?
Yeah. Why is the diversity?
Mm.
And if that creator is such a strong person, force, it's a matter of moment for him,
yeah.
or her, or combined,
mm.
to do this simple job.
Yeah.
They are sustaining such a big earth,
yeah.
in each microseconds.
Yes.
Whole universe.
Mm.
What is a human being in front of?
Exactly. Like, why bother sending rules down to something that's insignificant, because we don't live long enough to do anything. So where's it gone wrong? Is it that the humans crave, actually I think it's in my view, humans are born ignorant, so we crave someone to give us a guideline, something to follow, because we just don't know. Like, we don't come with a conscious awareness of the world around us. It's probably there, it's probably in the background. I think in the back of our minds we know what's going on, but consciously we are unaware of it. We haven't discovered it, or we just don't know it. So we do crave order. If someone comes in and walks in and says, I have the answers, most people be like, thank you, because I need answers. Because I've got lots of questions, but no one's answering them. So if you have answers, I'll listen to you. Because everyone's craving the answer, right?
Yeah.
But isn't it like the answers and the questions actually stem from inside? Most of the time, the question answers itself. But we live in this in the cave of delusion. So the person behind us waving the shadow book, well, it's almost like that's good enough. That's all we've got. So yes, that's what's wrong with it. And it takes a while to reach a level where you can kind of, you want to unchain yourself. And that's the thing. Those people in the cave who are bound there since childhood,
mm-hmm.
How do we know that they don't want to stay bound? They want to stay in the cave or the matrix. They don't want to get out.
They are not the decision makers,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
All you are dealing with in the human body is some of the physical choices you can make. Look into your life. Your mind is talking on its own 24 hours. Can you switch it off?
I wish I could.
So when this mind force is actually driving on its own and you cannot simply switch it off to zero or the way you want, that means you are making very less choices.
Mm-hmm.
You are driven to hunger. You are driven to thirst. You are driven to attention. And that is all subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something which you are consciously thinking. That means in our body of this existence of being human, we have many layers, physical layers, metaphysical layers, mental layers, emotional layers, psychic layers. And they're, I mean, scientific words and philosophical words about conscious mind, subconscious mind, unconscious mind. They are ultimately translating into certain intelligences actually operating on various levels, enabling you to exist, like your breathing system. Now, what you said about cravings on order, cravings of knowledge, cravings of knowing the answers, this is something inbuilt phenomena, because you are actually an expression of intelligence, in other words, if I put in there.
Yeah.
So the way I see it is, you have a torch, you switch it on in its default state, it projects to certain area, and then you use certain means, books, education, behavior learning, trainings, communication, etc., to expand the projection, like twisting the torch, and to see more. Let's take a simple example. You meet somebody and he gets angry on you. You might say, oh, you're a stupid person. You're being angry. This is not the way to react. In other words, you can see behind his anger or her anger and try to see what mounted that anger. Is it the ignorance he's suffering with, or the anxiety or nervousness, or a misconception about me? That person might have got angry because he might have heard about you from somebody else, and he, in his mind, he would be suffering that you said something about him or her, and he just could not stop him or her to express his anxiety in form of anger, and you took it as being angry on you, but actually that force started somewhere else. So the question is how much we perceive. And I see it, all the knowledge, even coming from the plateau, Socrates, or thousands of rishis in Indian subcontinent who scripted thousands of these sutras, is about expanding that projection, that how much you perceive. Because if you start to see that this person is not angry because he is angry, because this is a subconscious force which is driving him, that is driven by ignorance, you might start to feel compassionate, and you might start to engage with this person, to interact and to comfort him, to think differently. Same goes with work. You might start to see you're not working just to earn dollars, you're working to add certain value to certain group of people or the world. That might help you to make right decisions towards your work, and that would not end up into causing somebody a suffering. For example, manufacturing industry. We are producing so much electronic waste now, which is actually a big problem. Because our perception is not that much expanded. We only see till limited. The same goes with the international rivalries. Like one country see other as a rival because of certain interests. But if they get out of their egoistic comfort, and if their limited perception, they engage and talk about something expanded, that collaboration would end up something meaningful and beautiful and sustainable for both countries. So yeah, it's like a higher level interconnection I try to do with the idea of illusion, perception, reality.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of things to mine out of this cave.
This cave is never-ending mining.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it is a subject that we can approach from many different angles.
Mm-hmm.
So until we revisit this, it's been a pleasure, Tish.
Pleasure is mine.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you guys. See you soon. In the cave.
In the cave. Exactly. See you all in the cave.
See you all in the cave.
You have been listening to the Lunchtime Special Podcast. Subscribe and like us on iTunes, Castbox, Spreaker and SoundCloud. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Or visit us at lunchtimespecialpodcast.com. Until next time.